My daughter was 5 years old at that time, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and I almost went into depression. If your body produces too much insulin, that's your fault, because you actually consume, but you don't look after yourself. Your insulin overproduced lah. When my daughter was diagnosed, and then she just in which her pancreas failed to produce insulin.
Perkongsian kat luar sana kata insulin is not good, because they oversimplify say if insulin banyak sangat tak bagus. When you have sleep deprivation, it will affect with your ghrelin, di mana you constantly rasa lapar. So this is where orang kata mungkin terlupa baca bismillah kot.
And studies have shown that people who have poor sleep carries higher risk of developing dementia. Sebab tu proses penuaan ni becomes accelerated if you don't have enough sleep, because you don't give time to regenerate.
Tahukah anda, masalah tidur ada hubung kait antara otak dan juga metabolic syndrome. Hari ini guest saya seorang neurologist dari SGMC akan berkongsi tentang masalah otak dan hubung kaitnya dengan masalah tidur, migraine, epilepsi dan juga metabolic disease. Sebelum tu, saya dalam misi ingin mengurangkan 1% obesiti di Malaysia. Anda juga boleh membantu saya dengan cara follow, like dan juga share dengan saudara mara anda. Welcome to season 2 episode 29. Please welcome Dr. Shirini.
Hi.
Before we begin, thank you doctor sebab ada masa to drop by for my podcast. Okay, before we begin, saya nak kongsi sikit cerita mengenai Dr. Shirini. So, we knew each other when COVID kan? 2020. Back then, how we knew each other was because of her colleague, also a physician.
Yes.
And we were discussing about weight loss, eating habit. And I still remember this vividly. We had a minor debate regarding about carbohydrate. And to lose weight, you have not have to remove, but basically kena reduce lah kan. Mm-hmm. So that's our initial meetup. We discuss about that. And from there, Alhamdulillah kita bekerjasama and Dr. Shirini berjaya turunkan lebih 20 kilo lemak badan dengan her daily routine and also pemakanan. So, mind sharing that part before we start our podcast?
Oh, sharing the journey.
The journey, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it was, I think I have to really macam thank Kam for helping me and my husband actually in that time. Because we didn't know yang kalau you want to lose weight, you have to eat more. This just doesn't fit the equation, kan? But then Kam really taught us how to understand physiology. Coming from a doctor, right? Kam actually taught us, you know, how it works. Like, how do you lose weight in terms of how to burn fat, how to build protein. How to build muscle with protein and stuff. So it really helped. Macam cara pemakanan, make us understand more about health and also how to exercise. Actually, Kam never pushed me at the very beginning. He didn't even want to talk about exercise at all. And I kept pushing him and say, what do I do? Like, you know, do I have to run? Do I have to walk? How long do I have to walk? And then he just kept dismissing that question. He kept focusing on my food consumption first. Mm-hmm. And it really, really helped after that. And I think the best bit was, I found myself struggling to, you know, climbing uphill at that time to the point I was running uphill. And then we were doing so well, but somewhere in end of 2021, something hit our family. So like there are pros and cons in like, you know, all this. But my daughter was 5 years old at that time, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I think it was a normal grievance and I almost went into depression. And of course, my focus, I think I couldn't multitask and I just focused so much on my daughter at that time. I was sleep deprived, I was depressed. And of course, you forgot to look after yourself, I suppose. And so we sort of lost track there, but it's okay because I focus on learning about my daughter at that time. But the good thing was that I feel that macam Allah dah tentukan semua ni, because I told Kam this, because 1 year I learned from Kam about measuring your food, measuring your carbohydrate, how to cup count and all those things. And actually, when my daughter was diagnosed, that's exactly what I had to do. You know, every little thing that she has to eat, I have to count the amount of sugar in there. And, you know, I had help from my helper as well. And she was already used to us for the last year before my daughter was diagnosed. So she knows we have penimbang kat rumah all the time. Timbang nasi, timbang semua. So she knows what to do.
Yeah.
She knew what to do. So, yeah, so there was good thing that I met Calm. It helped me to manage my daughter's diet and to understand my daughter's diet. So now dah berapa tahun dah, Calm? About 2 years now.
Yeah.
And alhamdulillah, I think we are also getting, you know, getting over the emotions, you know, turmoil that we had with my daughter. We're moving on. And alhamdulillah, she's doing so well. And now I can focus on ourselves, on me, myself better. Yeah.
I would like to add on, yeah. So people assume life as a physician, there's no challenges nor obstacle at all. So I'm very certain your challenges, not just dekat rumah, as a mother, at the same time juga as a physician. And how you manage that stress, plus with managing the food and lifestyle, it's not as easy as what people assume. If I gain weight, must be eating too much. So we're going to discuss about this also. Does really eating too much going to make you gain weight? Or should you just cut your calories to lose weight? Because hormonal lifestyle and our brain ada kena mengena dengan semua benda ni. So thank you, doctor, for sharing that part. Now, the first question, semua orang nak tahu, how good habit, like eating habit and good sufficient sleep helps prevent brain disease?
Okay. So, bila kita cakap pasal brain disease ni, there are so many diseases that originate from, you know, problems in the brain. But I think we focus on the commonest ones lah, yeah, for public to understand. We talk about the common brain diseases. Selalu orang tanya pasal stroke. People ask about epilepsy, seizure, stroke, cardio, you know, heart attack, semua tu, but that's not brain. These days we talk about, like, you know, I will touch about a bit of dementia, memory problems. So how does sleep affect this,
right?
That's your question.
Good habits, like eating habits.
Good habits.
And good sufficient sleep.
Good sufficient sleep. So I divide it into two lah. Eating habits dengan sufficient sleep. Let's start with eating habits. I think kita tahu, we know, but whether we want to follow it or not is another thing, or whether we have the time to follow it is another thing. So we all know, orang kata like, apa, berapa serangkai, ya? High cholesterol, high cholesterol, high sugar, lack of high blood pressure, and then of course obesity, smoking, alcohol, all these can contribute to poor health.
Yes,
including getting, you know, your risk of getting stroke, stroke in which you get blood clots in the brain, ataupun stroke can be divided into either you have blood clots in the brain or you have bleeding in the brain. Heart diseases, so blockage in the vessels of the heart and also the brain. And we all know that. So we know that kalau kita nak reduce our risk, you just go back to all these five basic things again, you know. You have to have good eating habits because you need to make sure that your sugar is maintained at a stable level, good normal level. Not just stable level, but the sugar spike. Calm knows about this. It's not just maintaining within the range of normal, but you also want to avoid the sugar spike. And then when we talk about sugar spike, it's interesting because when my daughter was diagnosed and then she just recently went into this, she needs insulin. So she has type 1 diabetes in which her pancreas failed to produce insulin. And we know insulin is important. Without insulin, whatever you eat in terms of that will eventually break down into sugar, it needs a key to get into the muscle. Kalau, or into the cell. Kalau you tak ada hormone insulin ni, this is a key. Tak ada hormone insulin ni, sugar tu akan linger in your blood, in your blood, it won't go into your muscle. So you makan lah macam mana pun, sugar tu tak boleh pergi to your muscle, you won't get your energy, you will lose weight and all that. So because her pancreas doesn't function anymore, so she needs insulin all the time, either via injections, but now she actually managed to go on insulin pump, which gives a continuous insulin. And what I've learned from this insulin pump, because it gives you a continuous reading of your sugar, what you eat is so important, Kap. Because katakan kalau pagi tu, I bagi dia Coco Crunch lah, you know. All these cereals, kan? Kids like cereals. The sugar will spike to like 11 or 12. And then suddenly the insulin will, you know, macam fire. Nak reducekan dia punya sugar. Later she went into hypo, she felt sluggish, she didn't feel good.
Yeah.
But if she start her day by eating simple thing, milk and oat biscuits, she loves oat biscuits. Or she eat bread with peanut butter. Come your favorite food. Bread dengan peanut butter. You can see that the sugar didn't spike. And the whole day it will stay within range.
Right.
So it's the sugar spike that can actually cause insulin resistant in people with type 2 diabetes. So you kena maintain you punya diet in terms of jaga you punya sugar. Number two is cholesterol. A lot of time people don't understand. And I still practice this and tell my patient from KAM juga. Dia kan, orang selalu kata, doktor saya tak makan benda bergoreng ni. Ha, tak ada. Saya makan, I don't know, like some other food lah. Then I said, do you know how this food was cooked? How much oil is in that sauce? So this is where your source of oil is. KAM dulu bagi saya makan satu sudu kecil oil je untuk satu hari nak masak, kan?
Based to her measurement lah. Bukan strictly tell her jangan makan minyak. Is based to her measurement.
Based on my measurement. Mm. Bayangkan I masak sambal pakai satu sudu kecil minyak, kan? I still eat them. So we don't understand this. Oh, it's not just the fried food. How you cook your food, the sauces that you eat has oil in there. And then also hypertension, blood pressure. You have to maintain good blood pressure, high in sodium, stress, good sleep, all these contribute to high blood pressure. And of course, the rest, you can control them. Stop smoking.
Right.
Siapa yang minum alcohol, the non-Muslim and all that, and reduce your alcohol consumption. You know, don't binge drinking and all that.
Okay, I'm going to touch a bit about your daughter's health, Because people's assumption are like, to get diabetes, you must be obese first. And usually it happens after the age of 30 because you're a parent, you're busy with work, touch kopi do semua. How come your daughter boleh kena?
So, I'm glad you asked this question because, first of all, my daughter is, I don't know where the genes come from, but she is super active. And she's so careful with her food. She's not the type yang like to eat chocolates. You boleh bagi chocolate cake kat dia, dia tak nak dia eat yogurt. You know?
Wow.
Yes, and she would choose fruits. And she's not the type yang will binge eat sweet stuff.
Right.
So there's a difference between, there are two types that we're talking about. This is simple because there are a few types, but the basic one is type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. So type 1 diabetes happens usually in the younger population, in which, as I said earlier, the pancreas for some reason fail to produce the hormone insulin, which is the key hormone that help your body take up glucose. Your cell and muscle take up glucose. Without this insulin, you cannot consume glucose in the muscles. So you won't get the energy, you will lose weight. In fact, if too high glucose in your body, it will have consequences. You know, they build up in acid, they can go into comatose state, they can die. But in type 2 diabetes, different. Dear more to pemakanan and habits. Also genetic juga.
Right.
So in type 1 diabetes, some people, because of genetic problems, but also maybe some post-viral infection. But a lot of time we don't know the reason. In type 2 is pemakanan kita. Kalau kita have poor eating habits, kita consume a lot of sugar, we build up belly fat, we put on weight, obese, we have poor sleep, we have a lot of stress. This all develop into what? Insulin resistance, in which your pancreas is still producing insulin, but then it goes into overhaul juga because they have to keep up with your sugar consumption and the insulin keep, you know, having to shoot and try to bring this sugar into your muscle, but you have excessive sugar.
Right.
That turns into fat. And fat itself is a trigger for insulin resistance. So in this case, people have type 2 diabetes. In type 2 diabetes, doesn't mean that you need to go on insulin. there are oral medications that you can take apart from lifestyle changes. But eventually, if you still tak jaga juga well on oral medication, you punya pancreas pun pack up lah.
Yeah.
Dia pun give up, and then you also need to go on insulin. If type 1, they cannot take oral medicine because they don't have insulin. The only treatment now is just giving insulin.
So, okay, enak semua orang faham ya. Lumrah hidup, semua manusia akan ada organ tu yang sihat, and insulin tu memang akan ada untuk mengawal gula darah. Okay, so that's lumrah hidup. It's not insulin is bad thing. It's part of parcel of fisiologi badan manusia. Tapi ada orang kat luar sana atau ada perkongsian kat luar sana kata insulin is not good because they oversimplify say if insulin banyak sangat tak bagus. So there's a role about insulin. Macam doktor sendiri kata, I want you to imagine this. Imagine that insulin is like a bus. As a limited student can go inside the bus. The job of the bus is to send us pick up the student daripada rumah, hantar kat sekolah. That's the job. Meaning, insulin nak carry the glucose masuk dalam sel badan. That's its job. However, when it's too much glucose, tak bagus sangat. Over time, you boleh dapat diabetes. So, when orang dah ada diabetes, diorang terpaksa menggunakan this for those yang inject insulin lah. Terpaksa menggunakan insulin untuk kawal gula darah. So, I want to focus on this area. Insulin is not a bad thing. It's just a lumrah hidup. Cuma kalau terlampau banyak disebabkan lifestyle, tidur semua, dia jadi tak bagus.
Insulin, I agree with you, Kam. There's nothing about our body yang Tuhan dah cipta ni tak bagus. Apa yang jadi tak bagus is our attitude, our habit. Do you know how precious that insulin is for type 1 diabetes? To actually have something yang would resemble how Tuhan dah cipta. Macam mana kita makan, berapa banyak insulin keluar. If your body produces too much insulin, that's your fault. Because you actually consume too much carbohydrate, you consume too much sugar, you don't look after yourself. Your insulin overproduced lah. Apa yang Tuhan dah cipta tu dah perfect dah sebenarnya.
Betul. Totally agree on that. So I hope you all understand, insulin tu tak ada lah jahat mana kan. So jangan takut. Kalau you makan gula sikit atau carbohydrate banyak, dia akan keluar untuk cuba kawal. The process we call homeostasis. Homeostasis adalah nak menstabilkan semua benda dalam badan. So that's regarding about the lifestyle and pemakanan. And sleep pula macam mana? Because people were just, one of the argument people selalu kata, okay coach, okay tak malam saya tak tidur? Because I always lepak. Tapi I tidur pagi. Is that still consider a good sleeping pattern?
Okay. So sleep ni, I think Kam struggle so much with me masa doing my diet last time. Because whenever I'm on call je, or that week has been stressful, I didn't have like... He always asked me, how's your sleep? How was your sleep? You know? So, I think it is important to... Like, before I answer Kam's question about changing your sleeping pattern to tidur, siang, kerja, malam, something like that. Let's talk about sleep, how it influences our health.
Yes,
okay?
Please.
So, first of all, we have to understand, orang sekarang ni pandai pasal sleep because they come with their expensive smartwatch. Today, I slept very well. I went into deep sleep. I went into REM sleep, you know. Honestly, good you have the smartwatch. It gives you a bit of a general idea that you didn't move during your sleep. Okay, because that's what it measures. It measures movement. It measures, in the more expensive smartwatch, they measure heart rate changes, right? So, that's good. But the only way you can know whether you are in deep sleep or in REM sleep is actually doing a proper sleep study. No smartwatch can overtake this lah, kan? So now you have to understand about your sleep yang you come with the report tu. A smartwatch will give you all this report. You have to understand there are two parts of your sleep. You have your non-REM sleep and you have the REM. REM is rapid eye movement. Why they call it rapid eye movement? Because masa tu mata kita memang moving rapidly. That's why it's called rapid eye movement. So the non-REM sleep tu ada a few stages. It started off with you punya light sleep, stage 1. And then you start to doze off where your heart rate come down, your blood pressure come down, you felt your body temperature come down, metabolism dah start coming down. That's your stage 2 of sleep. And your brain wave pun kalau kita tengok dah slow down. And then come the deep sleep, which is stage 3. In stage 3, all your brain wave is so super slow masa ni. It's interesting, you know, to study of sleep because I have to look into sleep, kan? And I have to report this test that we do. So in deep sleep ni is like this time kalau nak bangun memang kata dah tidur mati tu. This is your deep sleep. You kejut macam mana pun susah nak bangun. If you nak bangun sahur time ni memang groggy lah kan. Memang teruk gila. So this is like your body become relaxed. And it's so important. I will tell you why is it important this stage. Mm. And then after this stage of non-REM sleep, you go into REM sleep. Mm. And this is REM sleep ni, your brainwave start to wake up. Your brainwave is just like you are awake. Tapi your body is paralyzed. Right. This is your dream state, you know. Masa ni lah you nak dream everything semua. But why you're paralyzed is a protection to you. Because you don't want to act out your dream and injure yourself with a tendang you punya spouse ke apa kan.
Right.
So in brain diseases, there are stages of this sleep that are affected. For example, people who later on develop dementia or Parkinson's disease, they might have problem with their REM sleep much early on.
Right.
So they act out in their dream. So the spouse might say, he talks in his sleep a lot, you know, and he talks and he punches and he kick in his sleep. So this is what we call REM behavior disorder, REM sleep behavior disorder. And when we see this, we have to really look out for, you know, whether there's patients got early sign of Parkinson's disease, early signs of dementia and all those things. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is REM sleep. So why is it important to have this good sleep? So berapa hours kita kena have good sleep? On average, I think we aim to about maybe 9 to 10 hours of sleep. But a lot of time we can't do that. So maybe we try to aim 7 to 8 hours.
Right.
And 25% of this sleep, which is roughly about less than two hours, has to be your deep sleep. It has to be your deep sleep. And I think this is what your watch is trying to say. You move ke tak move.
Right.
Okay, so this is your deep sleep. Why is it important? Sebab masa kita go into deep sleep, this is the time where our brain relaxes. This is the time they, you know, take time to regenerate cell growth. This is the time they nak heal you punya tissue, muscle, everything. Sebab tu proses penuaan ni kan becomes accelerated if you don't have enough sleep because you don't give time to regenerate. Yeah, these cells and all that. And then during this time of sleep juga, this is the time where everything that you've learned during the day being processed in the brain. You imagine macam during the non-REM dengan the deep sleep dengan the REM sleep ni, whatever you learn today, you simpan dekat desktop you.
Right.
And then bila malam you nak tidur non-REM dengan REM tu, it's the time where now you dah ada banyak folder, you nak masukkan dalam you punya OneDrive ke Google Drive. If you do organize you punya OneDrive and Google Drive, you want to know, oh yeah, ni go into this folder, this one go into this folder, this one has a bit of relationship with that folder.
Right.
That's what happened at night. Masa you tidur in non-REM and REM, whatever you learn that day, it gets consolidated with your old memories. So what you've learned that day, the brain itself kata, yang ni match dengan yang ni. Yang ni kita link all the puzzles together and becomes your long-term memory. So you imagine kalau your sleep, you don't go into deep sleep, you wake up or you have shorter deep sleep, you wake up, if accumulated over time, this is a time where people say, I cannot concentrate, I cannot remember, I have poor memory. You know, children who, why we want them to actually sleep in a long period of time, because this is the time where they are learning, they are consolidating this memory.
Yeah.
And you think about how you wake up today, you brush your teeth, you jalan, you drive your car, semua tu benda you tak payah fikir.
Betul.
All these are in your REM sleep. Motor skills are all in your REM sleep. Kalau memory yang apa you learn, your factual data and all those things is in your non-REM sleep. So dua-dua tu sangat important. If you don't have good sleep, your memory will be affected. And that is why if you don't have good sleep, it carries risk of you having memory problem in the future. And studies have shown that people who have poor sleep carries higher risk of developing dementia. Dementia in the future. And a lot of things also happen during your sleep. Your hormone level changes. Masa tu, kalau you have good sleep, ni kamu tanya soalan pasal siang dengan malam. Mm. Our brain ni ada dipanggil circadian rhythm. Mm. So malam kita pejam mata tidur. Kenapa kita kata budak-budak, okay, tutup-tutup lampu and then sleep. Because our brain register that when you switch off the light, the melatonin in our body goes up.
Yeah.
And this makes you sleep. And then when our eyes nampak lampu, nampak cahaya, melatonin goes down. And then you wake up. This is a normal circadian rhythm. So like Kam kata, kalau orang tidur kerja malam, tidur siang. Nah. Bolehlah tidur siang, tutuplah semua. Asalkan gelap, you boleh tidur.
Betul.
Okay, because of, but you make it as a constant thing. Because there are people who follow US punya time. They work during night time, but they sleep during daytime. You can't change that. Okay. That can happen, but it has to be a constant thing.
Mm.
And let's say masa you tidur juga, your cortisol level semua kan apa tu? Stabilize, kan? And then when you're waking up, your cortisol level goes up. Now you think about it, kalau you are sleep deprived. When you're sleep deprived, everything goes haywire. Your thyroid hormones go haywire, your growth hormone go haywire, your cortisol spike up during the night because you tak tidur properly. And then this one, come, ajak I dulu. The leptin and the ghrelin, yeah. So bila kita tidur, ghrelin level, okay, what are leptin and ghrelin ka?
Okay, so okay. Consider ghrelin ni macam hormon yang bagi tahu kita untuk rasa lapar, and leptin hormon yang bagi tahu kita untuk rasa kenyang. Yes, we can use motivation untuk tak nak makan. You know, kita rasa lapar tapi tak nak makan, we use motivation kan. But we have no control regards to this hormone. How do you want to manage this hormone is, apart from choosing the right food, is also lifestyle changes macam tidur yang cukup. There are studies bagi tahu bahawa when you have sleep deprivation for days, beberapa hari, sehari dua aja, it will affect with your ghrelin, di mana you constantly rasa lapar walaupun you dah makan. So this is where orang kata mungkin terlupa baca bismillah kot. Bukan. It's just that because of that lifestyle, it changes a bit of your hormone. That's okay.
Betul? So bila you sleep deprived, your ghrelin level goes up, your leptin actually gets suppressed.
Right.
So you lapar. I bagi good example lah, okay, myself sendiri. Kalau I have a very busy medical call, okay, I hardly slept. Pagi tu I tell myself, I'm gonna treat myself with a good nasi lemak at the canteen.
Yes.
Come on, it's not just me, right? You all pun sama juga, kan? So why? Because I feel hungry because my ghrelin level is very high.
Yeah.
And it's not just that. When you're sleep deprived, your body learns self-reward.
Right.
So there is a part of your brain, which is the bahagian depan otak ni. This is all scientifically proven. Eh? This is bahagian depan otak, which is your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. Amygdala ni ada a small structure in the brain ni yang control reward. You suka reward, kan? You only will crave certain things. You will crave sugary food. You will crave carbohydrates. Sebab tu, I nak nasi lemak, bukannya bangun pagi tu, I kata, I'm going to go and eat salad this morning because I had a bad medical call or very busy medical call. I want carbs and I want sugar.
Yeah.
So if you understand this, you know, oh dear, I had a bad sleep. I need to correct balik I punya sleep. Jangan tidur lambat. Lagi satu pasal devices kan. Yeah. Semalam I marah anak I because semalam balik terawih dia orang nak main iPad.
Right.
Okay. Masa main iPad, don't you wonder why they're not sleepy?
Yeah.
And the minute you letak dia atas katil je, tutup lampu, ha, tidur.
Oh.
Because it's the lights. The lights from you punya gadgets, the brain is still active, playing, thinking. That's why you can't sleep. So that's why you kalau you don't main handphone malam-malam, memang tak tidur lah. Because light tu still ada, brain still active. You switch off everything. Siapa yang susah tidur tu, switch off everything, tutup lampu semua, and try to sleep.
Okay, I'm going to touch a bit on this part, yeah. Whenever I consult a client, when client tu baru lah kan, dia akan datang, dia kata, coach, sorry lah coach, I tak dapat follow meal plan sebab tiba-tiba je nak rasa makan. I nak makan banyak. I'm losing my motivation. I would not conclude by saying that you lose your motivation atau you have no more interest to be healthy. I'll ask so many questions. Contohnya, how was your sleep? What happened for the past 2 weeks? How was your work? So those are the contributor kepada cara pemakanan you juga. Macam Dr. Shrini kata tadi, whenever she got on call, tiba-tiba nak makan nasi lemak. Why? It's not because she wants to eat nasi lemak. Kan? Bukan nasi lemak tiba-tiba buka.
I'm not like a big fan hari-hari you know, makan nasi lemak. No.
And I would ask like, what happened last 2 weeks? Oh, that stress. Oh, patient macam ni. Oh, okay, faham. So I have to understand that part, that due to her stress level, from her sleeping juga, that's why she choose somewhat unhealthy food. So ada banyak sebab kenapa kita pilih makanan yang tak sihat.
Yeah, so when we talk about all this sleep, so now relating to brain diseases or any health diseases, because of a lot of hormonal changes that happen in our brain and our body, if we have sleep deprivation, there are a few things that can happen. Yeah. You have cognitive impairment, memory problems, attention problems. You can put yourself at higher risk of getting insulin resistant diabetes, so type 2 diabetes, obesity because of the eating habits and all that. Mm. And also your cholesterol goes up as well if you're sleep deprived. Mm. And if you're sleep deprived as well, you actually memang betul will lose more muscle and you'll build up more fat. Yes. So you add all this together, what do you think your health risk is going to be if your sleep is not good?
Very true. Very, very true. So you can see like tidur je. So I pernah buat content, I can't remember when was it. Kata like tidur is one of the most crucial thing that we have to implement kalau nak jadi sihat. But people don't see the logic because people only see numbers. What does tidur got to do with calories? Kan? If you only focus on calories, it's something hard to digest. Tapi tidur ada kena-kena banyak sangat dengan lifestyle dan juga hormone. Okay, next question. Just now we mentioned about dementia and also epilepsy. Why not we touch a bit on epilepsy? Mm. Okay. Speaking about epilepsy and seizure, how diet helps with certain brain disease, like epilepsy, avoiding of certain food that can trigger migraine at the same time.
Okay, so we're talking about brain diseases in general. Okay, so we talk about, let's touch about how food can affect people with epilepsy. So what is epilepsy? Mm. Epilepsy is, if we do have viewers yang know someone with epilepsy, so essentially our brain how our brain function or talk to each other is via electrical activities. So it fires, this electrical activity fires in synchronously. So in people with epilepsy, unfortunately, they lack this synchronous firing. So sometimes in the brain, if there's any abnormality in the brain, it causes independent firing of this electrical activity. So renjatan elektrik yang tidak sekata, causing problem with sawan. So sawan yang kita selalu tahu ialah macam stiffening of the limbs, kejang otot, kancing gigi, all those things kan. Tapi sawan can also happen in a different ways, maybe change in mood, change in behavior of someone. So people who have epilepsy, they have to rely on medications, or sometimes there are other type of treatments that they can go to depending on the cause of the epilepsy. So there are banyak causes of epilepsy. Some of them due to brain structure problems, abnormality like stroke, brain injury, brain infection, ataupun abnormal development of the brain. Okay, so let's talk about epilepsy. Most of the time, we treat epilepsy with medications, okay, most of the time. But somehow in 30% of patients, we find that they are treatment resistant. So of course, there are other alternatives if they are suitable. They might be able to go for surgery. If not, there are devices that we can use to modulate or modulate the brain to help control their seizures. Tapi in some patients, they ask about how can they control their seizures with diet. Mm. So more and more studies are coming out to show that if patient actually makan or adopt ketogenic diet, which actually has helped a few of our patients with treatment resistant epilepsy, advising them on how to adopt ketogenic diet. So I think Kam can actually explain more about this ketogenic diet. But so ketogenic diet somehow alter these brain firing and cause them to have less seizure. So there are more studies showing that, but it's quite challenging, to go on ketogenic diet. So maybe Kam can explain a little bit about ketogenic
diet. Okay, so I'm just going to briefly share the history. Kalau you nak tahu kan, ketogenic diet ini bukan dipopularizkan oleh Dr. Atkins. It actually started way before that. How Dr. Atkins, kepada mereka yang tahu Atkins diet, he studies about this scientist. They were doing research on younger generation, whereby this younger generation are the seizure, and they alter their diet by reducing the carbohydrate, and they found out that carbohydrate can trigger seizure. So that was the studies. Then Dr. Atkins baca studies too, and he implement towards himself first for 30 years before he come up with his own book. Again, he's a physician. At the same time, he's focusing wholesome instead of medication, and he implement whatever he read towards himself first, and he see the changes. Bukan saja dari berat badan, tapi dari segi kesehatan. Hence why he focused a lot on reduce your carbs, increase your fat. But his approach, any fat lah. Itu yang tak berapa sangat, kan? So, focus on fat and a bit of moderate protein. So, dari situlah popularnya ketogenic diet. Keto diet means ketogenic diet lah, kan? So, your brain will start using ketones instead of glucose. So, brain can use two things, if you ask me lah, kan? Depending on your lifestyle, if you're a competitive athlete, your diet should be more towards the carbs, as in like moderate more towards the carbs. However, if you're a person that has certain kind of masalah, contohnya epilepsy, so terpaksa kurangkan carbohydrate tu. Bukan kurangkan tau, like extremely lower down the carbohydrate. I personally work with epilepsy patient, and I see the numbers in terms of carbohydrate tu memang beza sangat dengan orang biasa. Like for Dr. Shirini, I could give her 150 grams of carbohydrate and yet she still lose weight and no problem. For epilepsy client, if I do give her 100 grams of carbohydrate, she still lose weight, but she will kena seizure. So I have to be cautious with that part. I also work with Dr. Shirini punya colleague untuk membantu patient tersebut. So diet plays a lot of role regarding about epilepsy dan juga seizure. Now, I also do understand stroke patient pun boleh kena seizure, betul tak? So, can you share a bit about stroke patient punya cara pemakanan and lifestyle? Because most people will assume that once you're gonna stroke, don't do anything. Stay at home, recover.
Yeah, so I think stroke is becoming more and more common these days. I think kita tak boleh tengok disease as one entity. Kita kena tengok as a whole. Kalau you kata pasal risk factors of stroke kan, you are also seeing, you tengok balik budak-budak sekarang ni. They are a lot more obese children.
Right.
Okay, they are more type 2 diabetes. How many times I actually encounter 16, 17 years old, because I'm adult physician kan, so I see 16 and above. So 16, 17 years old yang datang, and then, oh, diabetes. And I thought, oh, is this like my child? Is this type 1, you know? So I will refer to the endocrinologist and they said, no, this is type 2.
Right.
And I will say, what, so young?
Yeah.
And then my colleague will say, oh, recently I had a 12 years old with type 2 diabetes. Right. So you are kind of type 2 diabetes, umur 12 tahun. And this boy or girl has a lifetime in front ahead of him or her. And you imagine over time what this sugar is going to do to their body,
right?
And high cholesterol, obesity. So we are seeing that much early on.
Mm.
So we are, because of that, and stress, again, poor sleep, stress and all those things.
Mm.
So we are seeing more and more people with stroke now, even in their 30s. My youngest stroke was 26 years old.
Wow.
You know? And all these things. So how does diet, affect, like, or once you have a stroke, like, I think this is your question, once you have a stroke, how do you modify your diet,
right?
Kan? I think eating habits lah. You know, I would say to my patient, I expect dia from tomorrow, you makan salad je. I had a boy who was 18 years old, just diagnosed with type 2, and the next day I saw their step makan salad and he looked so depressed.
Oh.
I actually put that all away and I said, look, you're already going so much in your head having this diagnosis at 18 years old.
Mm.
Let's start simple.
Right.
First of all, put your fizzy drink away.
Mm.
Second of all, no boba tea.
Right.
You know, start with all this. It's exactly what Kam taught me as well. Exactly. It's like, mana yang refined sugar tu, buang dulu satu-satu. Because this is a marathon and not a sprint for them. Same thing with my any stroke patients. I don't go and say like, okay, tomorrow juga you kena jangan makan macam ni, macam ni. No. So, you know, again, back to what we have discussed lah, you know, maintain a balanced diet. Orang, you can start with makan nasi, bukan tak boleh makan nasi. Dia orang tiba-tiba datang terus tak makan nasi. I said, you can makan nasi. Maybe jangan letak banyak kuah on your nasi. Simple measure kan, jangan letak banyak kuah. Maybe type of lauk yang you makan tu. Maybe more protein on your plate rather than anything else kan, or carbs to kurangkan sikit. And exercise pun, if you have a 100 kilo person in front of me and I say from tomorrow you pergi gym, Kam also never did that to me. I wasn't 100 kilos, but then Kam also didn't do that to me. So you start with, you start slow again. Cholesterol, makanan cholesterol, carbohydrate, sugar, refined sugar, kena kurangkan lah.
So the action plan kepada mereka yang ada atau kenal orang adalah try your very best to gradually reduce all this processed and refined makanan, because you want to adopt it as a lifestyle. Bukan sebab sakit ditukar lepas tu kembali kepada lifestyle yang tak sihat kan. So gradually reduce this refined and processed food. Adopt healthier lifestyle macam bergerak. It's not compulsory for you to go to the gym, but you have to move. Yang kepada mereka yang sedentary atau tak banyak bergerak.
And do it as a team. In a family, semua, you tak boleh suruh your father makan macam tu, you dok nyap-nyap-nyap makan ice cream depan dia kan. So, you know, do it together as a team.
So to conclude, masalah-masalah ini, which also include metabolic disease, ada kena-mengena, intertwine with your nutrition, with your sleep, and also your lifestyle. Jangan just focus on, I'm obese, I need to cut my calorie. Nothing wrong with that, it's just incomplete. Sebab dia ada faktor-faktor lain juga. So Dr. Sherini, any last advice you would like to give to the parents out there or for those yang ada masalah berat badan dan kesihatan?
I think number one is that everyone is fighting our own battle. We all have our reason for being who we are, right? Number one is that support each other. We might not be able to fight the battle with the other person, but we can do our best to support each other. So I think that's building your own support system is very important. You know, people who wouldn't crush you, but actually will build you. So that is important. Support system is number one. Number two, this is not like in 2 weeks I'm going to fit in my baju raya. Although I did say that in my Instagram, it's just a joke, you know. So this is not something that you want to aim short term. It is a long term thing. Habit is very important. I think that's what I learned from Kam, is trying to overcome the bad habits, because like I said, it is already embedded in your brain. This is your reward system. So you need to overcome that. Find another way of rewarding yourself. And how do you do that? Okay. And learn about, understand your body. You know, it's not just about food. You might go on calorie restricted diet and all that, tapi kalau you don't move, you have no energy because you don't have enough food in your body, you don't sleep very well, all this contribute to you punya weight gain juga. So I think if I don't even say about kurangkan diet, kurangkan makan semua kat sini, I'm just saying that generally I think this was what important to me. Support system, break that habit, and move, and actually maintain a balanced diet.
Right. Yeah. So I'm very certain dengan advice macam tu, you all pun nampak it's not that difficult. The difficult part are how do you maintain consistent. Again, try to find what suits your lifestyle and what kind of food that you can sustain with. So having said that, again, Dr. Sherini, thank you very much for your time. Banyak benda yang saya belajar, banyak benda yang you all pun dengar dan belajar. So insyaAllah kita akan jumpa in the next episode. Take care. Assalamualaikum. Peace out. Bye.